life might hand you budgets, schedules, family, and responsibility. But driving shouldn't be just another chore.
We're here to help you find a car you love. Something that fits your budget and your needs, but is fun to drive and makes you look back. I'm Todd.
I'm Paul, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. So you probably saw on our Instagram feed, we went out for a little drive. We've started shooting both cars. We've just started to do a little bit. And on Sunday, it was just a tiny bit, hour and a half or so we got out. And
it was actually more of a still shoot than anything, which we don't normally do, but we just realized we needed some stills. I mean, those of you that are looking on our other various feeds, you've seen both our cars together, but it's the GTS and the FRS. And we realized we need to update that photo. So we went out to get a lot of those photos, some drive-bys of your stuff, some beauties of mine for the pieces we have coming, and then there's much more shooting to do.
No kidding. That was fun. It was just like a reminder, man, these cars are fantastic.
Yeah.
Found a good road. We were up high. And as we were standing there, I just was kind of standing absentmindedly. You were shooting something, and I was just kind of waiting for you to finish. And, you know, we're up in the mountains, and a bee buzzes by. It's just kind of checking out the Lotus. I'm like, huh, I wonder if it's saying to itself, Dad?
you make a joke about it, but here's the ridiculous thing.
It's checking your car. I'm like, huh, it probably thinks, nah.
Almost any time I park that car, a bee lands on it. I don't know if it's tried to figure out if it's come home to mama or if it should pollinate with it. I'm not sure which, but bees love my car. This is true.
It's so funny. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not a Transformers, obviously.
No, it's not.
Any of that, but anyway, I just thought it was funny, but fun to be out. It was really nice.
It was great.
It was cleansing.
It was gorgeous. Yeah.
Got some good driving in that. It's coming up on 20,000 miles for my car. I need to get in for the 20,000 mile service.
Oh, sure.
So
yeah.
That's on my mind.
Need to take it to our local independent guy. He will do it right.
Yeah, he'll fix me up, I'm sure. So got to get that in there. But guys, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the podcast. We've got a lot of questions coming in some great debates here. You think I always say that, great debates, but you guys have been writing some interesting stuff. And I enjoy reading through all the emails because there's all kinds of stories in here and everybody's in such different places with their car disease from low to high. And so that's what I've picked for this podcast is John in Bend, Oregon.
Yeah.
He's 16 years old and he currently drives a 98 Toyota 4Runner. He says only 145,000 miles. Not bad for a 20-year-old car.
Isn't much for how old that car is. This is very true.
It's true, and that thing will probably run to 300 without blinking. But he's got 10,000 to spend, and his Paul limiter is also 10 grand. So
which means he really has 10,000.
Thinking 10,000. Contrast that with Kyle in Minnesota, who is actually shopping for his mother-in-law, which means he's got a great relationship with his mother-in-law.
Apparently, congratulations, Kyle. That's cool. She's asked for car advice from Kyle.
Exactly. She's turned to him and said, Kyle, I hate my new Lexus SUV, which is a 2017 egg, the RX350.
What's more fascinating, we'll get into it in more detail, but what's more fascinating to me is she had a Lexus egg before that. She had a 2012 RX.
Right.
And she's got the new one, and she's going, I don't like this new one. What do I have it for? And that's where the dilemma comes in. It's actually very interesting.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. I mean, quite a contrast between the two. So we'll start there. We've got to jump in here because we've got a lot of questions, and we figured we'd spend a little bit more time. It always seems like we get rattling off all kinds of news and stuff up at the top.
Sure,
so let's just jump right in.
Okay.
And start with John here, who's 16, as I said, up in Oregon. And he also says, I would like to let you know that all this talk about your getting your daily triple doesn't help the responsibilities of a 16-year-old driver.
This is fair.
Especially is driving fair. A 20-year-old Toyota truck.
Yeah.
So, yes, I'm guessing the 4Runner will probably never, ever see that speed.
It might. I mean, my old Caprice Classic. One of my Caprice Classics that I had, thanks to hand-me-down from my father, had the – you remember that time in American car history where none of the Speedos could go above 85?
Oh, yes.
That was supposed to keep people going slower. I actually do have memories early on in my car driving career of pegging the needle of a Caprice, which means I was probably doing 90, 95, you know. I don't know because the Speedo was now
was
pegged.
Was that dials or was that the
horizontal
bar?
Yeah, the big bar.
The whole bar,
one of the Caprices we had a bar, and then later ones had dials. It depended on which Caprice. I mean, remember, we had many Caprices. Yes.
We've got all this space on the instrument panel. What should we fill it with? I don't know. How about a needle that moves from one end of the car to the other?
Exactly.
Sure. We'll go with that. All right. So, John, I'm glad you wrote in. We've got some ideas here for you, but we want to talk this through with you because you're saying the 4Runner is slow. You'd like something smoother, lower, faster. And you're thinking safer for your own good, being that you are 16 years old. but that I also like, new driver.
If we go anything newer, he's safer. I mean, that's the truth of it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You think about how much safety technology, we're talking about 20 years old for this car, how much safety technology has existed. I mean, this car is older than he is. Also, keep that in mind. So all the safety technology that has happened in the last 20 years of cars, anything he gets that's newer will be safer.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And, you know, he's saying the obvious choice being the WRX. But apparently in Oregon, they're overpriced. Oregon, Utah, Maine, Colorado.
Yeah, these are the places sponsored by Subaru. You're right. Absolutely.
Do not buy a Subaru in these states. Anyway, I heard that CarMax was paying a premium for, I think it was Jeeps and Subarus, because they need inventory to sell, and they'll ship it to those dealers.
Because they'll ship anywhere. Yeah,
so
yeah,
for these cars, they would pay a little bit more than, you know, say a Honda Accord or something like that. All right, so John really likes Audis. He likes the B7 S4. He's worried about reading stuff about the timing chain, which is the same thing about the intermediate shaft bearing on Porsches, the IMS bearing on
it's
Porsches.
It's in the same family. Good point. I thought about that. Yeah.
I mean, it's the same. We can find every car's problem if we dig long enough on the internet.
Oh, sure.
Right?
Find an engine and then figure out what its issue is. That is a fairly short list.
So the other piece of news here is that he's been saving for a car since he was in kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd like his money to be spent well and then not worry about expensive maintenance down the road. So let's dive in here. But we've got to start with insurance. I mean, 16-year-old driver.
Yep.
We're very accustomed, I think, you and I, to diving right in and thinking, all right, you're 25, you're 35.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if we get you something hot. You've got driving experience. John's 16.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we've got to really think about this.
Yeah.
I love that you are spending your own money, because you said your parents are not helping this car. You're not helping out with this, which means you're going to be completely invested in ownership of this car, have more pride in it.
Completely.
It's your money.
Completely. Yep.
I think every kindergarten everywhere should start this
save for a car.
But then, of course, if they start now, by then it's
going to
be ride sharing.
It's going to be the pod savings program. Yeah.
Yes.
Saving for your future ride share. This is true. Sad to say.
Will people know how to use gas stations? Will they know how to
use them?
Just going to be snacks?
It's a good question.
And that's it?
It's a very good question. Charge stations and a snack, yeah. And the snacks will go all organic. 20 years from now, it's going to be like, I just like some jerky. I don't really eat jerky, but I just like to see some jerky on the counter.
I just like to see some. The gas pumps are going to be decorations from way back when.
Remember when we did this? Yeah.
They had TV screens embedded in the pump that would shout at you.
Yeah. Isn't that the greatest thing ever?
Why would they do
that? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Anyway, all right. So, yeah, we've got to consider insurance. And as much as I would love to get you into a Mazda RX-8, John, you're only 16. I mean, for 10 grand, you could probably find one of those.
Many, many, many options. Yes.
Bend, Oregon, you're saying, is similar to Park City in terms of weather.
Somewhat, yeah.
So, you know, Todd has definitely proven rear-wheel drive in the snow is no problem.
Yeah, agreed.
Right. Tires.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been thinking about this since you wrote in, John, and I thought, Mazda RX-8, could we get you into that? But it'd be a stretch in terms of, it'd be at the upper end of your budget for a good one.
Yeah.
But tires as well.
For sure.
And insurance on a hot sports car like that.
That is the interesting thing. I mean, John, this is the place where you have to kind of lay it at your feet and just say, dig around. Because I would say to you, two things, jumping off of what Paul just said. First off, you said you're wondering if you need to have four-wheel drive. I'm going to say to you again, I know it's not a surprise. No, don't worry about your drive wheels. What car do you want? And then get good tires. But as Paul's saying, that means you have to have some of that $10,000 set aside for a separate set of tires, maybe separate set of wheels. That might take $1,000 off of your workable money. You might instantly be at a $9,000 car. The other thing is, whatever we recommend, we have to put a little asterisk by it and say, pending your insurance check. Because I bet anything out of whatever list we have, and I'll start with that RX-8, there will be a couple cars in there that you'll be surprised by how inexpensive the insurance will be for you.
Mm-hmm.
But then there'll be cars on the other side where you're like, oh, this is my front runner, and they'll tell you the insurance price, and you'll be like, and it just died. So your situation in your area, that's not stuff we can look up for you. You're going to have to just go at your insurance company with a list of potential cars and see what's completely off the table right away.
I like the idea. I mean, yeah, check first, because are your parents going to be carrying that insurance for you? I'm wondering, because of the blanket policy and young driver, they'll keep you on their policy. So, Dad, Mom, I got this awesome new car. The insurance is how much, son?
Yeah, seriously, that's a problem.
Holy moly. Mm-hmm. So we've got to think about that. So like I said, I want to point you in that direction. But I'm going to stay with Mazda. Mazda 3s.
Yes.
We like.
Definitely.
And hopefully you can see the thread of manual transmission through all of these.
It'd be great if you can, for
I think
sure.
it's a life skill, John.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, who knows about pod driving? We'd never look up from our phones. Well, it's already here, right?
You're already driving that way.
Learn
You're supposed
manual.
To be driving, but yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, man, is it going to come in handy when you're on some camping trip and somebody says to you, hey, John, will you jump in the pickup truck and back the boat into the lake for us? And you'll know how. It's
yeah,
a
I guess.
Four-speed diesel, huge Ford.
Where is that truck living at, Ben? Yeah, I see your point.
You know what
though.
I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, hey,
yeah.
could you back the huge boat in the trailer for us because I'm busy over here? Would you go do that for us?
Yeah.
And instead of standing there like, I don't know how, you'll be happy to do it.
I don't know that I've ever told you this story.
Hmm.
My dad, my grandfather, my dad's dad, was a farmer. He
right,
ran a trucking
right.
company, and he was a farmer
in
nowhere, Kansas, okay? And my dad was an only child. And my grandfather, who was actually a very fun grandfather, was a really gruff, I'm not sure how to deal with you dad.
Hmm.
He just didn't really know how to deal at a kid's level.
Okay.
By the time he was a grandfather, he was this big roly-poly grandfather. He literally dressed up as Santa for the entire town. That's who he was as a grandfather. That's the only way I knew him.
Your grandfather is
my grandfather.
Santa?
It's crazy, isn't it? But as a dad, he was very much just like, well, my son just works on the farm and he knows how to do stuff.
Hmm.
And when my dad was 12, he tells a story to me. I've heard it many, many times. But my dad was 12. He was in the field. Your story exactly reminded me of this. He was in the field with his
okay.
father. And his dad said, hey, Dave, go. You see that truck over there? Go bring me that truck. Now, by the way, this was a huge dump truck in the farm field with a manual transmission.
Oh, not a pickup truck, you're saying.
My dad's never driven manual.
Like a dump
there
truck?
There wasn't a discussion about, let me tell you how to go do this. It was just, go over there, bring me said truck.
Wow.
So my dad had to march across the field at 12, get in the thing, figure out how to get it moving.
Oh, my gosh.
There was no instruction. This was his introduction to manual transmission.
How
it
crazy
to this
and
day.
What a story, though.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's, I hate to say it, that's the quintessential story of my dad and his dad.
Hmm.
And my dad still to this day, I mean, my grandfather's long dead, unfortunately, but still to this day, my father is kind of boggled by the kind of grandfather he became. Because as a dad, he was very much like, well, you know how to do this, just go do it.
Right.
Really interesting.
Right. That's amazing. I mean, that's probably how your grandfather learned from
it
your
may have
great
been.
Grandfather.
It may have been just like, here's like, the truck. Let's go get it done.
We're milking cows. We're doing this. We're doing that. Learn or get trampled, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nothing speeds the learning curve like imminent
like
death.
Danger. You're right. That's a great point. I love that.
Okay, so we've just coined our new t-shirt for this podcast. And moving on, John. I'm thinking Mazda 3, but I'm also thinking Civic, maybe SI, but again, the insurance equation.
I think the Civics are going to be really problematic for insurance. I think those are the cars that young drivers wreck. I hate to say it.
Yeah. I mean, we could go the Mr. 2, you know, the Toyota MR2.
You could, possibly.
You could go way back to an 88 to the first gen.
Yeah.
If you could find one.
If you avoid the turbos, you'd be okay.
Yeah. But again, it's so dependent in this category, which is such a twist for young drivers for us.
Totally, yeah.
I mean, really, it's almost 25 or under, as a matter of fact, for young drivers.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
I'm thinking in that vein, you could probably see that coming. I like your idea about Audis, but again, I want you to be, I want you to be happy and not get a money pit kind of a car.
Agreed. That's a real problem. That's a real problem, yeah.
Because we're really working with $9,000 to respect tires.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. That's a great point. I had a few.
All right.
I do want to reiterate again, John, don't think in drive wheels. You said you're wondering about four-wheel drive. Don't think in drive wheels. Think in smaller cars. You get front-wheel drive, rear-wheel drive. Just snow tires and you will be fine. And I'm going to actually call them winter tires. That's a better way to put it. Put those winter tires on in the winter, snow or no snow.
Well, because
you'll
of
have
temperature
of grip.
And ice has nothing to do with snow.
Totally. And so you're under 50 degrees steadily all winter. You're going to want those winter tires on. I did it with the FRS. There's nothing wrong with that. So don't worry about your drive wheels. I want to say that again. You kind of would like to have a hatchback if possible for the dogs and skis scenario of life, but it's not a requirement. So I like a lot of Paul's recommendations here. I'm going to say a couple. First off, look at the Focus. See what the Focus ST is for insurance. Go older. Go the last-gen Focus ST. Look at see if you can find one for your budget, and then check and just see what the insurance is. Because I think the Focus in the non-ST form has a surprisingly good dynamics about it. It's just got a good chassis. You can get that in the wagon without it being the ST, and I think you'd still really enjoy it. You can get it with the manual. I think you'll like the handling dynamics of that a lot. And it's got the hatchback shape, so I think that's a really good option is the Focus.
Okay.
I like your Mazda 3. Of course, that in hatchback would be great.
Yeah, absolutely.
You could, if you want to go this route, if you want to go German, I'm going to put these two out there. I would say research your insurance and research your problems with the year you're chasing. Either a used Golf or maybe even a used Mini. I think a Mini would be cool.
Oh, that's kind of interesting.
But some of the early Minis, some of the combinations of early Minis were money pits. So do your research.
The early cars.
Beyond even just the insurance question, just do your research on, is this possibly a money pit? I had a wild card, and then you'd be surprised if I don't mention it. But the wild card is, so you're coming out of a pickup. What about a used Infiniti FX 35 or 45? That's their CUV before everybody was making CUVs. It's their slightly truck version of the G35 sedan.
So you'd be talking first gen. Mm-hmm. Can you get those for 10 grand though?
I did. I looked it up.
Great.
They're out there.
That's surprising.
So you're talking about a SUV with some sporting intentions in engine and transmission, but it is an SUV in shape. That's my wild card. And then you'd be surprised if I didn't say it, you can get them all day long for this price, John, Saab 9-2X. You can't find the WRX. Shop outside of your market, get a 9-2X because nobody knows what it is. If you get the Linear, that is the non-turbo, you'll be well under 10 grand and your insurance will be no problem. If you can get an Aero, check out your insurance. If you can get an Aero, that's the turbo now. You bought the WRX for cheaper because nobody's shopping Saab 9-2X.
Man, it's so refreshing to talk Saab.
Except we're talking just, Saab, the only Saab that's actually a Subaru. Yeah.
It never happens, but you're right. Is the STI steering rack available on both Linear and Aero? So it's the turbo is just...
I think it's on both.
Is it the same, and then the turbo differentiates things?
I believe
right?
so, because if memory serves, Subaru was... I mean, Saab was essentially just doing part choices as they go, and I don't think they did a different steering rack. It's the STI faster steering rack, I believe, on both. Now, the Linear has smaller brakes. I do know that. Mm-hmm. The brakes are better on the Aero, and of course, the engine is better. But if you could get a manual... I know you could get a manual Aero for your money. My question is, what's your insurance on that car? And I simply don't know.
Right. John, the point here is you've got a long time to be a car enthusiast and work your way up. But again, being 16, when I was 16, I had a 1977 Jeep Grand Cherokee that was rusting from the inside out. You've all heard this story.
Yes.
The gas needle moved at 60 miles an hour. I could watch it just slowly
creep. It drain.
Yeah,
I hear you.
So, yeah, I was driving that car, so you're great with a 4Runner right now, but you're about to move to something probably pretty fun, and I think any of these choices could really work. Kind of depends on what you want, but just keep in mind, we don't have to get you into an M4 GTS right now.
It's true. You have a little bit of time to wait.
You'll be all right. Mm-hmm. So that's the big headline here. John, thank you so much for writing in, and guys, thanks for listening. We'll take a quick break and be right back. All right, moving on to the next debate from Kyle up in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
where they eat casserole and end their sentences with a preposition.
Why not?
I know this. I was born there. See, I can tease them because I was born there.
Yeah, you can take credit. I hear you. Okay.
Hey, guys, you want to go with? That's very Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
So, Kyle, I had to tease you a little bit. Greetings from the land of 10,000 lakes. You're right, absolutely. And I love that your mother-in-law turned to you being the car guy.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for thinking of us. Because
yeah, definitely.
Hi, mother-in-law. We don't know your name, but I'm sure Kyle is now sharing the podcast with
you because we're
about to suggest a lot of things. I'm really wondering why, though, you're not liking your egg, because you had the prior egg.
Isn't that interesting?
And now you've got the 2017 egg. So
she says she's come to realize she hates her Lexus SUV. And if you stop the story right there, you go, okay, she doesn't like Lexus. No, she came out of a Lexus.
Right.
So it's not like she went way off the map and went, I don't really like this. She got the next one. And kind of feels like she got taken and feels like she wound up with a car she doesn't actually like and got talked into, which is honestly tragic.
You probably took it to the Lexus dealer and said, I want to trade up.
Yeah.
I love the 2012, so naturally the next one must be even better.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case.
It's just not working for her, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing here, guys, is... Kyle, you're right. This is going to be a fun debate because She is brand agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Agreed.
And she is the CEO of a profitable mental health company, but mm-hmm. doesn't take too much stock, as Kyle says here, in excessive luxury cars like Maybach, Rolls, Bentley. She wants luxury, but not too much luxury.
And she wants an SUV.
And it has to be an SUV. So simple, luxurious, reliability, mm-hmm. simplicity. Tech is a concern.
Mm-hmm.
So we're wide open. And as a matter of fact, reading further on down, Kyle says, there is no budget. I don't think anybody's written to us with this sentence.
Yeah, that's actually a scary little sentence to throw out there. I still reined everything in. I still stayed somewhere in the neighborhood of a loaded out Lexus. But you're right. We can go above that for sure.
I mean, I mean, the Lamborghini Urus is coming out soon.
Bentley Bentayga.
SUV. For everyone. Wow. All right. So also, the decision does not have to be right now. It gives you time for you to take her driving.
She wants to go looking, which is great.
That is the first step, because she's going to find things she really doesn't like.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
then because you said she's open to any brand, that could really, just open up some new areas, some likes. Wow, I didn't know I liked this brand. Mm-hmm, I like this new mm-hmm. model. Maybe I always had this perception, you know, preconceived notions about whatever it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so you suggested a few things here, BMWs, Audis, even a Range Rover, which apparently you're really pulling for a rangey. But she wouldn't mind a Toyota or more affordable brands if they fit her needs.
Yeah, I mean, this is really cool, because we're dealing in a situation where Kyle's mother-in-law is, as you said, both brands don't matter and we don't have a hard stop budget, mm-hmm. which is really cool. So it's this luxury SUV thing. It's got to have some good tech. Mm-hmm. I have three categories. I have two things in each category.
Okay.
I have I don't care if you buy them. I don't care if they become short front runners, but two things I think you simply have to take your mother-in-law and get her to drive.
Okay.
Two things that I think need to be seriously considered you might not have thought of, and two things I think are on the short list for possible buys.
And interesting.
They're all in this SUV. I essentially chased the 5-seat SUV with good tech, nice interior, good place to be.
I had a boss for a long time designing furniture, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. His name's Richard, and his design approach was whenever somebody hired the small firm that I worked for him, and he was the principal, he was the name on the door. So I did a lot of design work, and big companies would come to him for projects. Steelcase, Gunlock, Brown Jordan Furniture, mm-hmm. Tropitone, on and on and on. And so he would present one design. Mm-hmm. He would present one mm-hmm. choice to the CEO, because typically you think, all right, I'll give him five choices, or I'll narrow it down to three, and they'll pick a little bit of choice A and a little bit of choice C, and we'll make a new B number one.
Uh-huh.
And it distracts from the concepts, the intention. And so he would always deliver one, and this has really stuck out to me, because CEOs mm. are not used to saying, here's the design you hired me to do.
Yeah, they're not
this
used to hearing that, for
it's
sure.
It's one, like it or go away.
You Honestly, hired me to design. Here is the design.
Exactly right. They don't get a say, because CEO of said company, you're not a designer. That's not your expertise. That's why you hired me.
Fascinating approach he had. I know it worked for him like crazy, but it is interesting, because you think, I'm going to hire a designer and we're going to see 8 million variations.
Yeah.
And, here this
and
guy
I get
you
to
work
choose, and then I have a
in the
hand
door
in the decision-making. CEOs are used to, you know, here's this report and here's this article. What should we do? Well, let me help you out. Let me guide mm-hmm. you. No. Richard's doing that to the CEO.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to do that for cars, because there's so many brands, and you might like some stuff and you might not like others.
Yeah, yeah.
You probably saw where I was going. I cannot do that to these kinds of choices. But it just got me thinking. I've always sort of thought, when you and I are doing this debate, did we just say, here it is, one? Well, we don't know your mother-in-law. We don't know everything. But I will say, she's the CEO of a very profitable
company. Yeah.
Company. Mm-hmm. So or anything that we choose has to say CEO.
Fair point.
Because there will be salespeople, there will be professionals that might drive, who knows what they'll drive, something really nice.
Now we're building the other side of the, can I drive a nicer car than my boss equation?
Right.
What you're doing is getting the boss in a really nice car so nobody has to worry. Perfect. Problem solved.
Bentaygas for everyone.
Solved. Yes.
If only Bugatti made a SUV. Just kidding.
Brace yourself.
I'm sure. That's not exactly where I'm going, because I'm thinking of size And yes, price, mm-hmm. but I'm thinking of unique.
Okay.
This was my approach because the CEO, she should drive something unique and interesting. Maybe it didn't cost as much as the $100,000 Cadillac Escalade that somebody drives.
Sure, sure. I hear you.
Who cares?
I hear you. Yeah.
That's fine, but it's unique. And oh, what an interesting, intriguing choice. Tell me more how you got there.
Yeah, that interesting. Kind I see where you're going.
I want that vehicle to do that. And so that's what drove me to say,
great.
CEO unique, standout, doesn't have to be the most expensive thing.
Sure.
I know that's scary coming from me.
It is. I'm kind of bracing myself. I'm very curious to hear your list.
Crazy wild. But I will start at Porsche. We must talk about the Cayenne and the Macan both.
Okay.
I actually am kind of leaning towards the Macan because of the size. Mm-hmm. She might actually appreciate the size, but go for the top end. Get a Macan Turbo.
You think? Wow, okay. All right.
I mean, fully loaded, it sits really nice.
They're
gorgeous. Could go to GTS. Mm-hmm. Those are still $100,000.
The Macan S would be great.
Honestly,
don't think your mother-in-law would complain about. I have the Macan on my list.
And do.
Okay. And that's actually on my. I think that's short list to buy is the Macan. I really think that car needs to be driven.
It's
soon.
Up there.
Yeah,
it's up there. And you know, I think about all these brands. I will steer you, pun intended, away from Maserati, specifically the Levante.
Yeah. No. Don't do that.
Please. It just seems like you know. New money. What's the first thing you buy? A Rolex. Yes. Yes. They're
Next
great
is
watches.
The Maserati.
Don't buy a Maserati. Honestly, it's Jeep switchgear in there.
You're right. It is.
You open the door and think, Jeep Grand Cherokee for $90,000.
Yeah. Fair point.
No,
fair
thank
point.
You.
Yeah.
And they're unproven. And besides, they're ugly. Debate me on that one, but they're
look
ugly.
Out. The designer's throwing down. Yep.
So I'm saying no Maserati, no Lexus is out. Mm-hmm. Especially that new Lexus. Infiniti doesn't build anything that you and I like. The Narwhal is especially revolting.
When you go up there, the Narwhal, that's what I call their big SUV because I swear to you, it looks like a Narwhal. It's one of those things where once that struck me, I can't get it out of my head. I mean, they do still make the whatever they call the QX50 or whatever, the one that is the variation of what I just recommended, the FX35, 40, whatever. It became, they still make that. It's like the random one on their lineup. I'm getting it wrong, but it's like the QX70 or something. It is this rear wheel drive, slightly hot, hiding in their lineup car. They do build that SUV, but that's not the one you ever see.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the Narwhal that I'm just like, what is going on there?
Just throw cues and numbers at the wall and something will stick. And that's a new model from
new
Infiniti.
Nomenclature. Perfect.
I'm thinking, Porsche, the new Cayenne is coming. As of this recording, the 2018 Cayenne is not released yet.
True.
I have high hopes. I'm hearing a lot of weight reduction. Of course, the corporate rear end that we've now seen on the new Panamera will probably be present. A lot of refinement on the front end, and from a tech perspective, it could be cleaned up. Now, I know you and I like the buttons. Mm-hmm. It's simple, it's clean, but it could be overwhelming, and the screen, the digitization of everything could be appealing. We'll see.
It'll be the Panamera interior put in the Cayenne. You know it will be. It's introduced with the Panamera. It'll flow through everything, which I will miss the buttons. I agree with you. The buttons are very daunting when you first sit down, and then you get used to them and you know where everything is without even looking, which is why I like it. But it's all going to go screens.
My choice, though, here, I'm thinking unique. Of course, like I said, Porsche was on there. But Kyle, I'm going to Range Rover, going to Land Rover,
all right.
Just like you're thinking. But it's not the big boy.
Okay.
It's the brand newest, what I think is a unique size. It's the Velar.
Really? Okay.
I'm intrigued by this. I'm intrigued by the interior. I'm intrigued by the cleanliness of the design. It's not the most expensive Range Rover you can buy.
True.
But proportionally, it's very striking. I actually like it the best of all the Range Rovers in their lineup now.
Okay.
It's not a Sport, it's not the Discovery, it's not the tall roof, it's not the full big one that's sort of typical. It's the Range Rover that's going to make people go, huh,
I guess.
What is that?
I see that. I see that.
Well, I've never seen this. Velar, that's brand new. That's a new size. The interior is delightful. It's refreshing. It's very clean, maybe a little too cleaned up, but it's very easy to look at. And from a design perspective, the things that we relate to on a design are because they're familiar shapes.
Sure.
Not strange looking. What is this shape? I mean, that makes for good horror films and good sci-fi movies, but even
not
still.
Good car design. Yeah, I take your point.
Even still, there's shapes in there that our eye relates to.
Yeah.
And so that's what you find here in the interior. So I'm liking this car. The more I look at it, it has a nice stance. It's very cleaned up, and I'm really curious about that. Plus, she's got time to go drive it.
Yeah.
Range Rover Velar for her.
Okay.
This is an interesting car.
I like it. Well, I'm going to go through my list real quick. It is six. It's, again, it's two on Drive, two on Consider, and two I think might be shortlist to possibly buy.
Okay.
But I was trying to think.
I like the category thing.
Yeah, I was just trying to think, okay, you've got time to dig around, and it's been Lexus two in a row. Mm-hmm. The prior one she really liked, the current one she really doesn't.
Right.
So let's just run around a bit and drive some things and see what strikes. That's what I'm really excited about here, okay, is driving some stuff. So two on the Drive list for sure, Kyle, so that your mother-in-law can get in them and just you can just say to her, what do you think of that?
Okay.
The brand new Mazda CX-5. We talk it all the time.
I just saw a new one.
They're great looking.
They're gorgeous.
It's a class leader at that price point. They're not expensive.
Yeah.
You know, $35 will get you a loaded one of those. The interior is very nice. The revised interior I really like. Go drive the CX-5 and see what's possible in an affordable, genuinely affordable five-seat CUV from a Japanese company. That's just, I just go drive that and get a sense.
That could be an interesting thing. She might say, this is a it costs how much?
Exactly. I think that's
You're
why it has to be driven.
Me.
And maybe that car surprises you so much you buy it, and I would applaud you. But just go drive it, because I think it may not be on your radar. Go drive that car. The other one I want you to drive, because Kyle's has brought up Range Rovers, go drive the Evoque.
Okay. All right.
It's this same size. Just it's you're not going into the big boy Range Rovers, you're not going nuts, but it is
right.
A Range Rover. It's great looking. You can go 2-door, 4-door. Go just drive the Evoque. That 4-cylinder, I remember from driving it, that 4-cylinder always feels more powerful than you would think.
Really pulls
so,
along.
Yeah, it's great.
As I was thinking, yeah, on the autobiography giant Range Rover. No. There's no point. That's just throwing money around for no reason.
And the size that she's going for, I think the Evoque is very much worth driving.
Sure.
Two on the Consider list, because I don't know that you would ever think of these. I think you should go drive them as well, because I think they're more in that kind of – because, again, I'm obviously headed toward the Macan on the shortlist to buy. So I'm trying to think about competitors to that you might not think of.
Okay.
Two. Okay. Go drive the Cadillac XTS. That is their five-seat right now. It's been refreshed in like the last 18 months.
Yeah,
I'm starting to see more and more of them. It's a very polarizing styling, but I would say the current Lexus RX is as well. Very polarizing styling. You're now into an American brand. It's the American Lexus, if you will. I hate to put it that way, but if you're not, you know, if you haven't been in a Cadillac in a while, this is what we're competing with, okay? So go consider that, because it's off may not be something on your short list to consider. And also to consider the Mercedes GLC.
GLC's up there. We just had Laura write to us podcast.
So the GLC is something worth driving and just going, this is what Mercedes. It's almost like when you went and drove the Range Rover, you go the Evoque, you go, okay, this is what Range Rover is. You're in the XTS going, this is what Cadillac does. You're in the Mercedes GLC going, this is Mercedes. And you can just really talk about what are we liking here. But since she wants classy, she wants nice place to be, tech, all these kind of things, I do think the Macan's on the extreme shortlist. But I also think, for places to be, Volvo XC60.
Oh, the 60, the brand
Not
new
go
one.
90. 60 is the right size for what we're talking about. Go drive that Volvo, because if we're talking about classy, not flashy, great place to be, this kind of size, she pulls in on a Volvo XC60. It says all the right things, I think.
Absolutely it does. And I keep ranting and raving about the interiors on these new Volvos.
They're killing it.
They're stunning.
They're killing it. Yep.
I mean, yeah. Go find the S90 and the XC90s and the new XC60s.
They're gorgeous. But I don't think you have to even go that high. I think the 90s, both the SUV and the sedan in the 90s, are awesome.
Gorgeous.
But you step down, you're far cheaper.
Yeah.
They're not flashy cars, but they're great cars. Great styling, very classy looking, understated class, but fantastic. And then you get inside and you just go, this is amazing in here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like that neither of us ran to the most fully loaded, most expensive.
Not necessary.
Possible
I don't get
thing
that's
you
the
can
sense.
Buy.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that either, to be honest.
I will say, speaking, Kyle, to your mother-in-law real quickly, I will say this. I say this because my mother-in-law has gone through a string of Lexi.
Yes.
Lexus is killing it on service experience. The way you get your car serviced, the loaner, the way they treat you, that is almost one of one in the industry. I don't want you to judge your next car buying experience by that, but just be aware of the fact you might lose the service experience. But if you're buying a brand new car, you shouldn't need a service experience. But I'm just saying.
Interesting.
Because that is almost become the biggest factor for my mother-in-law's second Lexus purchase. Actually, third Lexus purchase was just she didn't want to walk away from the service.
Yeah. And they know they got you on that too. That's part of the deal.
I mean, you know, Mercedes does well. There's other marks that do well, but Lexus really, that's what they're cornering their own market on that. So just be aware of the fact that you're going to be at a different dealer experience, but go buy a brand new car. You shouldn't have to go there much anyway.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, guys, really hope that helps. Kyle, say hello to your mother-in-law if she's not already listening. Hope these suggestions help. And when she does decide, let us know. We'll be curious to see what she ends up on and hope it works out. So, guys, thank you again. But, yeah, jump into questions. So many on here. Yeah. Thank you so much. When we post up, I think all of you are waiting. What's the photo? What's it going to be?
Yeah.
And we've been having fun on Instagram lately. But jumping right into Cajun Michael's question here on Facebook.
Okay.
Cajun, you ask a lot of questions, and they're really well thought out. But you're collecting tips about owning and driving a car so you don't forget when the time comes for you to own something interesting and hot, that you'll have all these sort of tips and tricks in your tool bag.
It's for his first child when they start driving. He's trying to think of all of the things mm-hmm. that you have to pass on as a dad for your first-time driver. Remember to do this.
Yes. No, I'm glad you cleared that up. It's not for him. It's down the road.
He's like a year away from first driver, and he's so worried about not saying that stuff that, okay, well, you have to remember this. He's wondering what those are. Yeah.
For me, Michael, is ramp angle. Now, ramp angle is the front and rear of the car when you pull up to something going down a hill and you go into the water drainage ditches that are concrete or, you know, coming up a steep driveway, something like that. I see this all the time. As a matter of fact, there's a lady who drives a Mercedes SL in my neighborhood, and she comes down the hill, comes to a stop, and then goes straight, like, I mean, the hill where it meets the flat ground.
Oh.
And I hear this crunch, this awful sound every time, like, approach it at angle.
Yeah.
Just position your car and learn to drive at an angle and ease through things like that. Learn to read the road instead of just
that's huge.
Blindly coming into something and bouncing off the front of your tow hooks or worse, you know, damaging the undercarriage or oil pan or something like that. Because the suspension cannot rebound quickly enough, especially at that ramp angle. So front and rear
overhangs.
Those overhangs mm-hmm. dictate the ramp angle. Obviously 4x4s have a taller ramp angle and
they can
climb up something, especially Jeep Wranglers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But cars, they cannot. And when you come in at speed, the whole front's going down and then the engine settles on the tires and it's just like
this.
Bam!
This may be the only thing in driving that stance guys are better at than anyone else.
That's a good point.
The people that stance their cars know more about angles to get over speed bumps and tiny little pebbles than anybody else that drives. And I have to think about it now a little bit in the Elise. But
yeah, you do.
But what's interesting
low.
Is I'm very low. But what's interesting is if you look at that car in profile, the wheels are almost on the four corners. So if I come against a speed bump or one of these ditches you're talking about with the water flow into a driveway, if I go anything off of straight on, I'm probably fine. Mm-hmm. If I find one that's problematic, I just go a little bit off of straight at it. But you're right, straight at it, I'd be scraping it up.
I mean, curb bump stops are another one where you don't have to pull the car all the way forward onto the sidewalk to park.
True. Yeah.
Learn to park in the space and have visual cues and, mm-hmm. you know, get to know the corners of your car and have visual space around you or just sort of imagine that car around you.
So yeah,
you
that's good.
Think in 3D. Think of that car around you.
That's excellent. Michael, I'm going to say jumping off of that, that's actually a great segue. Jumping off of that, I want to say two things that struck me. First off, this is not a statement. It's an exercise.
Okay.
Take that young driver to an empty parking lot, go to Walmart and buy those little, they cost you nothing, 6-inch cones.
Oh, yeah.
And set up things like parking spaces.
Good one.
And get them to do stuff that runs over the cones.
Yeah, destroy the cones.
You know, you can try a parking space. You can try a really narrow parking space. You can try set up a very low speed little slalom just to see how close they can get it so they realize, oh, I have to be that close to hit the cone. That's where the tire is.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't want to discover that when you're driving normally. But whatever car your young driver is going to drive, you want them to know exactly what Paul's saying. You want them to know, how big is this car and where are my tires? And running over a cone or not running over a cone tells you that information very quickly. So I would recommend that. I would also say teach them that they should not be able to see the sides of their car in their side mirrors.
Oh, thank you for saying this. We've touched on this before, mm-hmm. but thank you for bringing that
you
back
just
up.
Go, and here's the thing. You just go to where you can barely see the edge of the car, and then just one tick out, that's now right. You shouldn't be able to see this down the sides of your car in your side mirrors.
No, I like that. All right, what questions do you have here?
Dominic Brown wrote in on Facebook, and he said, he's got a large family of six. And he said, is it really necessary to have two family haulers if we have a family of six? Can't one of these cars be small and fun? They already have the family minivan. So, Dominic, I'm going to throw the question back at you and say, what's your schedule of the week? What's Monday through Friday look like? Because if you, Dominic, are in a situation where your wife takes your four kids somewhere, but after work you have to pick up all four, you may be in trouble. I mean, you may not have an option, you know, because you just got to get four kids in car seats into a car and you got to pick them. But if that's not happening, then absolutely not. If your weekly schedule is a situation where you're going to pick up one or two, mm-hmm. then get yourself a 2+2. Get yourself a small whatever. That's fine. But if you are, your schedule regularly means, okay, honey, I'll pick up all four kids and I can't take your van, you're stuck.
V10 you know? Econoline. Welcome to it.
Well, but see, my wife and I do this navigation, especially now with the Elise. My wife and I do this navigation where she has the Cayenne. If I want to take the dog anywhere, if I want to take the bikes anywhere, it will not be in the Elise. So we just have to look at our schedule and coordinate, and I have to go, all right, I'm coming to you. We're swapping cars to get it done. But she likes the fun car. I like the fun little car. We just navigate the schedule. So that's the other part of it, Dominic, is just figuring out what is our schedule. Can we trade cars so that, honey, I'll give you the fun car for the afternoon and I'll pick up the kids, but I gotta get the van from you at some point. I think that's a real option. So you really have to look at your schedule. But I would say, honestly, if you have more than five people in your family, you're going to wind up with something three row. You just are. But you've done that. You have the minivan.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean that's all you have to drive.
We're here to free you from that kind of thinking.
Hopefully, yeah.
No, that's great. What else? I've got one over here on Facebook from Kyle. He's asking me, with the advent of Todd's new Lotus, when am I finally getting into a BMW? In all seriousness, and somebody else wrote to me and said, when am I getting rid of the Jeep and getting a Cayenne? As you know, I've canceled the M2 order. Well, it was never an order, so I didn't have anything to cancel. It was just, give me my deposit back. I'm tired of waiting. Mm-hmm. And I love the M3s. I do. And that M2 still intrigues the daylights out of me. I thought I was going that direction. I really did. But then the Cayman GTS pulled me right back in. That's where I'm at. So I have not thought about getting rid of the Cayman. That has not crossed my mind, to be honest. I'm hoping to hang on to it as long as possible.
And what I find funny is that any time you actually start looking at fun cars and then go drive your Cayman, it embeds itself further. Doesn't matter how far you were into looking, you drive the Cayman, you get out, you're like, yeah, I'm never getting rid of this car.
I just told you the other day when we were driving, I thought, doesn't really feel like it has enough power. That's because I'm under 5,500 RPMs.
Yeah.
And then when I really crank it up, I'm like, oh, right, there it is. Okay, never mind.
Oh, and we're fine, yeah.
I mean, it doesn't sound like much on paper, but...
No, I hear you.
It moves.
Yeah,
it
absolutely. That car flies, and it hides its speed so well. That's the thing that continues to shock me about your car. You look at it and you go, oh, my gosh, how did I get there? I mean, that happens every time you drive that thing.
So funny. Yeah, it happened again when we were going, but like, oh, there's the power. I forgot. Anyway, it's one of those engines that you got to wind out. It's not a drag race car by any means, but so fun. So anyway, back to the BMW. I'm still thinking about it. I mean, to be honest, I have really considered an 80s 911 maybe again, but does that...
No one's surprised, but yes.
Way too much into the deep end? I mean, I'm already there. I definitely want to trade the Jeep in at some point for a Cayenne. It won't be the new one. I don't think it'll be the new one. It'll be... I'm looking for a 15 or 16, somewhere in there, with the new 918 Spider style steering wheel.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I just think that's kind of the sweet spot. And it doesn't even have to be the full boat anything.
Well, but if you're shopping 15s, you're about to be into a three-year-old car that, with the 18 coming out, is going to be three-year-old car from the quote-unquote old body style.
Right.
Those are going to be, comparatively now, affordable.
Right.
I mean, they're not going to be $100,000 cars anymore. They're going to be 50.
Which, you know, getting the price of price for the Jeep. And
exactly. Once you get out of the Jeep, you're going to be almost there. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm thinking about it, but I guess since the M2 dream died for the moment, I haven't really picked the BMW mantle back up.
As you've said, you have a Porsche and you're about to buy a porch. This is what really is going on in your life.
The deck is falling off the back of my house because the wood is rotting inside the paint. It's hidden, the rotted wood, and you can, I can twist the bolts with my fingers. That's how bad
it's
it
bad
is.
News. It's bad news.
I have to pay money anyway.
Craig, you wrote an interesting question on Facebook that you actually kind of wrote to me on the one area where I am plagued. Actually, you asked, have I ever had, or have either one of us ever had buyer's remorse after purchasing a car? Why the remorse and how do we remedy it? So this is an interesting thing that is into my history. Long before we started the show, I'd been married 5 minutes. Okay. I'm in my mid-20s. I've been married 5 minutes. My wife had a Jeep Wrangler she loved. She'd had it for a couple of years from brand new when we were engaged. She had it, and she loved that car so much. But we got married, and we realized we wanted something a little more just kind of all-purpose usable. We'd been married maybe a year, okay? And I'm, quote-unquote, the car guy of the marriage. But I'm mostly ignorant, and I'm certainly ignorant as far as going into a dealer and negotiating and buying a car.
Mm-hmm.
We found a GMC Yukon that we really liked that was used.
That's right.
We traded in her Jeep. And we bought the Yukon. Now, the good part of the story is we bought the Yukon at about 60,000 miles. We drove it till 250,000 miles. It was an amazing truck.
It served you well.
It did everything we ever wanted.
Yeah.
Over that time, we put a transmission in it. But it just ran.
Holy cow.
And it was an amazing truck in all kinds of weather. Went to Mammoth. So ultimately, the story ends up really well. But the bad part of it is I did everything wrong at this used car dealer, and it was a used car dealer that pulled every trick in the book, and they got me on every one. They got me on telling me what the Jeep was worth and what features it had on it, even though I, somewhere in the back of my mind, knew they were telling me wrong, and I didn't fight it. They got us on what the Yukon should have been paid for, what it was worth. I mean, they pulled every trick and got us. They sold us an extra warranty that was actually terrible and rarely actually paid out.
Of course they did.
I mean, honestly, think of the used car scam. They got me on, like, check the boxes. They got me on them all.
Oh, my gosh.
And I realized about 24, 36 hours later after buying the car was like, we got screwed. And it's my fault. And it plagued me for weeks.
I didn't realize that.
Thankfully, the truck was awesome.
It was awesome.
My wife loved it, and we had it for a long time. She loved it so much that when we got the Acadia, which was brand new, the Yukon wasn't. When we got the Acadia, she never liked it half as much as that Yukon.
Yeah, I remember. She always talked about it. She still talks about
the Yukon, and she loves her Cayenne. So what's happened to me is I've become much more educated. But don't talk to me 24 hours after I buy a car.
It
happened with the Lotus.
Did it?
24 hours after I buy a car, I am convinced I just got taken advantage of. And I hate to say it, but it just plagues me. I'm suddenly besieged by, I got taken. And it's because of that experience. Now, I've never felt that way since. Since then, every car I've bought, even if it's needed stuff, this Lotus needs some shakedown stuff done.
Sure.
Well, you know, because it's a 10-year-old car, if nothing else. So, you know, it's just going to cost some money, not because it's a Lotus, at least because it's a 10-year-old car, you know. So there's stuff that has to be done. But anytime that stuff raises its head when I buy a car, I'm right back to that mid-20s guy getting taken advantage of. And it's not really the case anymore, but that one just – it hurt me, honestly.
Wow. I think mine was my first Porsche, the 928. And I don't know if you remember, but I bought it when I was gainfully employed at a design consultancy. And I bought it 1 month before September 11th, 2001, when the economy crashed, when I mean, he couldn't afford to keep designers on staff after that. So I was let go and I was just freaked. It wasn't necessarily about the car, but
but it's sitting there now.
How am I going to pay for this thing? Oh my gosh. I just bought the world's most expensive money pit. What did I do? Why did I choose this? And before I was thinking, maybe time, you know, I've got a real job moving up in the world. Maybe time to treat myself, you know, that kind of thing. And then when I lost my job, it was like, you idiot.
Oh, what did
you do? Why?
Yeah, that's hard.
But nobody could see it coming. Of course.
Not. Yeah.
I ended up freelancing. I had a business, I designed consultancy for 10 years and I kept that thing for 3 years. So you just never know. But that moment was just, as did everybody, as you remember, the economy just took a nosedive. Everything crashed. A lot of people lost their jobs and I was one of them. And it was just due to work, lack of work coming into the design consultancy. They couldn't afford to keep designers. So I was this cool designer driving around in this hot car and what am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm such a poser.
But that was just you entering the shallow end of the pool of Porsche.
Exactly.
You were just tiptoeing your way in. Who knew what was coming?
The start.
Yes.
And then the more I read, the more I experience, I'm like, there's this whole world I didn't know about.
Uh-huh. Look, they make watches and pants.
Totally.
Cologne. Oh, must get that.
It's the best. Love it.
Michael wrote in on Facebook and said, this is jumping off where we just were. Have we never seriously considered an American car when buying for ourselves? I've actually owned multiple.
Yeah, yeah.
And my wife, up until the Cayenne, everything she drove was American. She had a Ford Explorer. She had a Jeep Wrangler. She had a GMC Yukon. I came up, again, before buying my 370Z, my 300ZX, before buying my Z car, all the cars in my life had been American cars.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, again, had a string of Caprice Classics. The reason, Michael, that I don't typically seek them out personally for my car is because of the kind of thing, as I started driving a lot of things, because of the kind of thing I started realizing I liked. I like small and lightweight. That is about hanging on to speed, not powering out. That is not traditionally what American car makers make.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm the guy that talks up the Chevy SS. I think it's impressive. I'm the guy that talks up, get a big fun sedan. I like the Corvette. I like the Camaro. I even like the GT350 Mustang, and I've traditionally not been a Mustang fan. My dad owned Mustangs. They still never resonated with me.
Mm.
But the GT350, I'm like, why don't we all buy one? But if I'm going to have the choice between something like that great GT350 or the new Camaro or Corvette versus something tiny like the Lotus, I prefer the Lotus. America doesn't make that. If Chevy made a Miata fighter, I'd seriously consider that car.
I mean, the Pontiac Solstice was a great example of a modern, tiny American car.
Absolutely, and it was cool. Last. It didn't, unfortunately.
I don't know that it was necessarily due to lack of interest. It was killing the brand name, and it was due to market economy stuff and all that kind of thing.
Totally, yeah.
But American cars, American car manufacturers don't do the tiny thing.
They don't do the tiny rear-wheel drive. That's not what they've done. You're right, absolutely.
I mean, you did have an affair with an Audi 80, or was it an Audi 100?
It was the Audi 90. Okay. We had it for about 6 months.
Yeah.
It was like a bridge car between an Explorer that was dying and the Nissan Z.
Where do I put all this extra money in my pockets? Oh, I know, an Audi 90.
How do I get a rolling cash fire? How do I do that? I want to burn cash, but I want to be in motion at the same time. Exactly. Buy a used Audi 90. Done.
And we have your solution. Made the joke before. I have a Jeep Grand Cherokee, which is the prior generation Mercedes ML chassis.
True.
German.
Yeah, yeah.
The company is completely owned by the Italians. The engine is built in Mexico, and the car is assembled in Detroit. So, is it American?
Where is your car from?
Don't know.
Identity crisis.
I don't really know. So, we'll call it American. My family is a Ford family. I worked at Ford. I worked as a designer for Ford, and my whole family owns Ford. They're just, Ford people. My dad has a huge SUV, and, my sister and her brother-in-law just own a huge F-350 diesel in Alaska.
It's like walking into the dealer and going, what's the largest thing you have with a lot? I'll take that.
Gosh, when we were towing the boat, we were 53 feet long. I mean, just... And the boat is 10 feet 6 inches wide. Lanes are 11 feet.
Mm.
Learning how to drive a trailer.
Yeah, I'm sure you'd do that right. Man, oh man.
All right, what else is on here? Gosh, so much fun stuff. What tech are we excited for? What fuel efficiency technology? New clean diesels, the 48-volt mild hybrids, electric accessories, full electric. What are we really excited for coming down the pike here?
What I actually do like, I really like what all of the manufacturers did with the latest round of hypercars, where you have very powerful engines, but before they get onto their really powerful area, they are torque-filled by electric.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's awesome. And I like I like the idea that, I mean, Porsche did it more this way with the 918, but whereas, you know, you had Ferrari on one end where you can't run full electric at all, McLaren in the middle, and then Porsche on the other end where you can just run full electric. That's the idea I really like, where you can have the option. It's the best example to shorthand it, but it's not the way I want it executed. But it's the Chevy Volt concept.
Okay.
Where you can run electric, and you can run, I mean, like the current Chevy Volt, you can run electric now or you can run electric later. I could get in a Chevy Volt here in Park City, drive it all on gas. I mean, I realize it's a gas generator, but drive it, use burning gas to get to Salt Lake and then sit in traffic in Salt Lake only running on the battery. You get to take your option and go, window and work the battery. That idea I like a lot because I feel like it's the best of both worlds. We don't have an international charging or national charging infrastructure, certainly not one that's fast.
No.
So the option to be able to just, I can fill up in 3 minutes with gas and just keep going indefinitely, that's usable. But yet having the electric option and then being able to use both to make the car even more powerful, I think that's the best on all fronts.
Yeah, I like the trickle-down technology from the supercars. And I just wonder, this is a hard one for me because you're right. The Volt is, the way you're describing it, ideal. Mm-hmm. It really is. But they just haven't caught on in terms of sales.
True, yeah.
I mean, the Fisker Karma was that spaceship from the future doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. And the Volt, we're on the second generation now, but it hasn't caught fire, metaphorically speaking. We don't want it to get
fire. We don't
want
it literally. Yeah, I get
it. The sales numbers haven't caught fire. Everybody just seems to be enchanted by full electric cars. But for me, and I know for you too, a big part of the experience is the sound. And when we all go electric hot sports cars, that's a big chunk of my experience that goes missing.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
The Porsche Mission E, that's coming out.
Yeah.
I know it is. It's going to be awesome, blah, but it's not going to have any vibration and sound, and that's part of the experience for me for Porsches.
Sure.
Come on. Will there ever be an electric Mustang?
That's a great point.
Sacrilege.
Well, you know, you're bringing up the point that, you know, as we talk about electric and you're talking about Porsche, it reminds me of this reality. The people we've heard of and talked about, and every journalist on the planet that's talked about how the problem with the 718 is the sound. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're bothered by the fact that you're now in a four-cylinder, how much are you going to be bothered by the fact that it now doesn't have an exhaust note?
Right.
If the 718, at least sounding like a four-cylinder, doesn't work, we've got a problem. Yeah. It's an interesting point.
I'm putting that out there. This is a tough one for me. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by electric. I'm intrigued by tech.
Mm-hmm.
But taking that away from me, the crazy, obnoxious, crackly downshift that my car does, I love
I know
that.
You do.
I find excuses to make that happen. I stick it in sport mode and drop into second gear and
just
jump
to
off
say
the
you
gas.
Did. Yeah.
And
yeah.
it echoes off canyon walls. It's glorious.
Yeah.
I find excuses. That's gone with electric cars.
Mm.
Completely gone. So it has their place. The commute, the sedan, the long distance.
Yeah.
Electric cars eventually will go longer than you can hold anything in your bladder or anything in your gas tank.
Sure, of course.
They will go 800 miles,
will.
No problem.
Of course they will, yeah.
But that's what they're going to be great for.
Of course.
But for us sports car enthusiasts, I mean, the Tesla Roadster was a toe in the pool.
Yeah.
By the way,
yeah.
I'd love to get a Tesla Roadster with your car
would be
as a fast blast.
Yeah, that would be great. That'd be really cool. The really cool comparison.
I mean, they relate. That'd be...
For sure.
That'd be fun.
There's got to be one locally that we could source. That would be a very cool shoot. I agree. Yeah. You know, another one I just thought of tech-wise that I would like to see, and I know pieces of what I'm about to describe exist, but I want to see it in a mundane, you know, like let's say I'd like to see this in a Mazda 3 or pick your $30,000 Honda Civic. I'd like to see a fully configurable IP. The instrument panel is a screen that you can every person can configure it exactly what they want to see. And I don't want any manufacturer nav screen or technology. I want to be able to plug my phone in because the phone does all of that.
Oh,
the phone is the nav screen we want. It's the music we need. Everything you
it
carry
is.
In your pocket, that's all you want anyway. I want to be able to plug the phone in so that the car manufacturer is just worried about the information that the car will give me in the instrument panel merged with my phone and touchscreen. Imagine just taking an iPad and going, no, put this here and I put that there. I want a big tack in the center. I want music in the corner, but I want you to configure it like this. I want this other information. I want temperature and oil pressure, which most people don't care about, but I want those things. I want that in this corner. Fully configurable screen that works with the phone. I know all of the pieces of what I've just described exist, but I want that in just all cars. Just go do it.
Yeah. No, you're touching on the in-car experience, which is what every car manufacturer is testing and dealing, creating mm-hmm. internal scenarios to explore
yeah.
in terms of design. Mm-hmm. What will this be? Because interiors are getting so important. I mean, they obviously are, but with any cool new features, autonomy, whatever that is, the interior's got to be where it's at. Yeah. So you're talking about that in-car experience, which is fascinating. Yeah. And it's going to be different for everybody, which is so cool.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. But I think, you know, I still want to be able to be out there and be driving and involved. I want to be involved.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I'd love to be able to say, these are the things I want to see, and this is how I want to interact.
I mean, think about it. Of all enthusiasts, you are the most easily, you know, translatable to the electric future, because you'll just buy a Tesla Roadster and just keep on going, right? I mean,
my car shopping goes here. That's funny.
What else? I'm thinking Turo. Kyle N. is asking, if we were to put a car on Turo for other people to rent, what would it be? I'm going pickup truck. Going just cold, hard cash, moneymaker. Just
maybe.
You need a pickup truck? I got your pickup truck right here. Go beat on it. It'll take the abuse.
I think in the short term, I would go Tesla.
Would you?
Because I think they have enough intrigue for people
yeah.
that you can get them rented. And I also think I think they would rent regularly, and I don't think there's much to break. Because you think you treat rental cars bad. That's what's now happening to your Turo car. I mean, we've been to LA and we've found like high performance, nice cars on Turo. And I just think, okay, we're not going to be nice to this, and we still might be the nicest people that rented it.
I mean, we found a creaky old Ferrari 348.
Yeah, all bad.
Like, whoa.
All bad.
Here's your switch gear and your door handles back.
Yeah, and how much money does that cost to get it back up to spec every time you get it back from a renter? That's a nightmare right there.
What about a Model 3? Think somebody's going to put a Model 3 on Turo?
Oh, I'm sure.
That could be an interesting way to jump into that car, too. I mean, just get experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally. Kind of what I'm thinking. Yeah. What else? Anything else on your list here?
I've got a couple others. Staryu on Instagram asked the question, have I ever thought about getting my son into karting? Yes, but money is an object. Everyone I know that does karting with their kids, forget the time for a second, that is a money pit of a child's hobby. And I do not have the money for that. Now, there is
a stepping stone to Formula One.
Yeah, clearly. Yeah, that's exactly what's going to happen with my son. No, but seriously, he really does like karting. We've been to K1 Speed a few times, and he thoroughly enjoys that. And actually, K1 Speed has a little series that they do, and all electric karts have a little series that they do for kids. I've thought about it, and I'm going to kind of gauge his interest, because that feels like a fairly inexpensive way for him to try it competitively, because he really enjoys it, but he hasn't fully connected the competition with the how do I get better yet. He just enjoys being out there. He's like his dad in this regard. He enjoys chasing his lap times and just going, oh, I did a little better there. Why did I do better? But he hasn't really connected that up to, oh, I need to do better than that person. Mm-hmm. That's not really in his headspace yet, which I'm fine with. So that might be an interesting way to do it. If he wanted to do it, that's great. But everyone I know that does it, it's such an expensive hobby for kids. I mean, I do not have this kind of cash, but okay.
Yeah, pouring money into that. B. Raup on Instagram asked both of us, what would we change about each of our cars? That could be something to touch on real quickly here.
I am chasing gremlins in the Lotus Cobra alarm. That is the OEM alarm.
Oh, yes.
But it's from the Cobra company. I had an aftermarket Cobra alarm on my 300ZX, and it was the bane of my existence on that car. Somehow I have worked my way back to a car with a Cobra alarm, and I have been trolling the Lotus Talk forums about ways to kill this alarm, because it just does little weird things.
Yeah, water makes it do funny things.
Yeah, after hand washing the car this weekend, it decided that the siren just doesn't like getting wet, which is going to be a little problematic when it starts to rain. Yeah, so that would be the first thing I would change. I don't want anything that feels like an aftermarket. Alarms have come so far in 10 years. I don't want anything that feels like the old key fob. It chirps and it's done alarm. Those are just problematic. That's the fast change.
I'd change on the Cayman the inner fender liners. There's half of the fender liner just gone. It's just the upper part of it is just the sheet metal. It's just the chassis up
really?
In there.
Huh.
Of course, it's all coated with all the, you know, the metal,
yeah.
you know, protective stuff on it. that they dip it in, but there's no plastic fender liner. There's no shaved monkey fur. None of that stuff up in there.
Shaved monkey
fur. You know what
fur.
I'm talking about.
I do know what you mean, but it's just Audis, still funny. You know? Yeah.
None of that stuff, because the car just takes all the gravel on the road and throws it up into the wheel wells.
Yeah.
And it sounds like a rock tumbler.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds expensive and like things are breaking.
Yeah.
And just,
yeah. Yeah.
I cringe. And of course, you know, rocks, you know, in Utah, it's construction season right now. So
yeah, it's build season. They're building everywhere.
It just, the tires just throw rocks up into the car.
This is the downside of having good summer tires. Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to change those tires out. I'd really like to see what it'll do with Michelins, but
yeah,
I feel like the Goodyear Eagle F1s are just breaking loose too soon.
Hmm.
I'm trying to get on it in corners and they just kind of get all just hard and slick. And
interesting.
They're not putting the power down. So
okay.
Anyway. Okay. Guys, thank you so much for listening, for watching. We really, really appreciate it. And keep the questions coming. If you've got your own car debate, write to us on the website, everydaydriver.com and everydaydrivertv@gmail.com.
Yeah, definitely.
You can reach us there. And if you've got comments, any of that, please let us know.
We read all your ratings and reviews, so we appreciate it very much.
Again, thank you so much. Looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.